entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and flying solo today. Every morning from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, we will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, our topic today is social and restorative justice, which essentially is positive outcomes for all students. Our guest, Troy Javier Leonard, is a school psychologist and current supervisor with the Los Angeles Unified School District, as well as the current president of the California Association of School Psychologists, which is the largest statewide organization of school psychologists in the nation. With almost 1,800 members, it is the strongest voice for school psychologists practicing in California schools. Now, along with major news on the organization's latest work, Troy will discuss the practices that school psychologists can use in their everyday role with students, the school-to-prison pipeline, and the use of restorative circles and positive behaviors to support and work with all students while they're in the school setting. Troy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Alan.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And I think that, we'll get an opportunity to talk about a lot of different subjects as it relates to working with students in school. But what I'd like to start with is to talk a little bit about restorative justice or restorative practices. I know that when I work on the show, and as many people that listen know, you know, I'm at the gym and I'm pedaling, and people come up and go, "All right, so what's the show going to be about on Monday?" And I said, "It's going to be about restorative justice," and I immediately got these blank looks on their face, like, "What? We've never heard of that." So for starters. Right. Let's share a little bit about what it is and why we have it.
Okay. Well, originally it began really focusing in on the criminal justice system, and it's a philosophical framework and a series of programs that emphasize the need to basically repair the harm done to crime victims through a process of negotiation, mediation, victim empowerment, and reparation. And it began in Canada in the mid-1970s as an idea for victim-offender reconciliation. And so in recent years, as we've been seeing, across the nation and definitely in my school district, LA Unified, that, you know, we were just seeing such high skyrocketing rates of discipline referrals and expulsions and things like that, which was basically having students not getting educated. And so we thought a lot of school districts now adopting this into the school setting. And so how that translates into the school setting is about creating and fostering a community that fosters relationships and to repair whenever some behaviors or situations occur that creates conflict within the school community. And so it's about building pro-social relationships and, again, emphasizing that we're all part of one school community and a larger community as well.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Now, you're saying that it started more as dealing with something that had to do with criminal justice. So it's right. Now it seems to be something that is being dealt with and brought out more by school psychologists. So is this something now that we're trying to deal with more of the kids across the board? And is this something that school psychologists are already trained in the principles of this?
Yes, definitely. That it's for the larger community of within the school system, not just the ones who may be in, say, special ed, or the ones who may be having some challenges in school, but really emphasizing that this is for the whole larger school community. And school psychologists are integral members of the school community, and they are definitely trained in a lot of the areas in which these restorative principles are aligned. It has a lot to do with, empathy, conflict resolution, building positive coping skills, teaching conflict resolution skills, and school psychologists have a high amount of training in those areas.
So now, if I recall, is this very similar? And I remember going back to probably the 70s and 80s, where we're trying to get kids more involved in the disciplinary area. And I know that, and I forget the names of it back then, but I mean, it was student involved court, where they were sitting in circles to sort of discuss what the proper discipline would be, while having school staff present to be. To be involved in it and to try to
facilitate the process.
Facilitate, that's exactly the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to facilitate it, is that what we're looking at now, that this is a more expansive version of what was starting to happen there in the 70s and 80s?
Yes, exactly. It did come as an outcome of that, and we're kind of expanding on that. And it, like you said, it's creating those safe spaces in which there's an encounter between the person who has done the harm and the person who has been victimized, and then having along support people and the whole community, thereby helping the students to understand that the interactions, and when there's the conflict between one individual within another in the community, it really impacts the whole school community, because it begins to permeate throughout the whole school and the whole school system. And that's why, and I think that's why school districts across the country are looking at it, because they've seen that it just escalated to a point to where it's created a very sort of unsafe, kind of unaffirming of positive community in the school setting, which is what we want it to be, because that's what fosters, success for students in education.
Yeah, well, anybody that's listened to this show before knows that I love success stories. Now, can you give us some of the statistics and some of the individual success stories, so that people can get an idea about how valuable this is, and the types of situations that kids are now seeing, exactly what their actions caused, and what the consequences can and should be for what happened?
Okay. Well, at least one report coming out of Oakland Unified School District that had the program instituted reported that suspensions dropped by more than half over the 3 years since they started the program in 2011, from 34% to 14%. The report also stated that graduation rates increased 60% at high schools with the programs, compared to only 7% at schools without them. Chronic absenteeism dropped 24% at middle schools with the programs, compared to a 62% increase at those middle schools that didn't have them. The district will now expand the program throughout 80 schools within their school district.
Yeah, and I want to touch on one of those statistics and just mm-hmm. make sure that everybody got it. The one that stands out to me is that graduation rates increased 60% at the high schools that had the programs. Okay, so they increased by 60% compared to a 7% increase at schools that didn't have them. That is huge, and it's one of the biggest problems that I know that we have, and obviously in right here in Los Angeles, as far as a huge dropout rate. So something like this that can make that sort of difference, obviously something is being done right. do you or can you share, obviously without using anybody's names, but you know, some of the more individualized examples of how this works?
Okay, at the California Conference for Equality and Justice, they hired Joseph Luciani, who was from Belgium and an Eastern Mentine University graduate student who studied conflict and peace building, to work at Augustus Hawkins as a full-time restorative justice specialist. Luciani trained on a school with the school teachers over the entire summer, and the teachers were instructed to work on building trust by gathering students weekly and asking questions about their lives. The students in turn talked about their relatives that had been killed by gun violence or deported. And when a student acted out, teachers would try to handle the situation in class. And if that didn't work, they would send the student to a counselor. Repeated offenses worked their way up to the principals, and if warranted, then there would be suspension. At the program that Rojas runs, suspensions dropped 44% the next year. So you find that it's really about allowing and creating spaces for students who, particularly, you know, in LA Unified, in a lot of urban cities, that are coming to our schools with, you know, from communities where there's violence, coming from homes where there may be discord and conflict and violence going on in the home, and they're bringing that to the school community. And then, therefore, by giving them spaces to talk about those experiences, helps to kind of mediate their acting out on that in a negative way towards the other peers in the community.
Now, I know that you have a conference coming up, and again, for any of the teachers out there listening or the school psychologists, you know, that maybe either aren't aware of this, share a little bit about the upcoming conference in Riverside as far as when it is and how people can get more information on it.
Okay, yes, the conference is going to be starting on October 14th and it goes through the 17th. On October 14th, we will be having a town hall panel discussion on the school-to-prison pipeline, and this is really what was the basis for a lot of this whole restorative justice movement. It was that we were beginning to see students being pushed out at an alarming rate because of these behavioral issues. And so we felt that it was really important to kind of really start off the conference with this area. And we're going to have Special Assistant to Kamala, Attorney General Kamala Harris, her Special Assistant Jill Habig will be part of that. We have our keynote speaker, Dr. John Hodge, who will be part of that, and we also are going to have, I don't have his name offhand, but he's one of the attorneys that is has been suing one of the school districts on behalf of a student who was I believe it was Compton Unified School District, that was basically homeless and ironically chose the school building to be the place that where he would find safe haven and sleep. And instead of giving him support, they expelled him. And so it's those kinds of issues that really is forcing us as a community with all stakeholders, you know, parents, you know, school police, teachers, educators, school psychologists, everyone to be involved and to come up to the table to figure out better ways of addressing the challenges that our students are coming with. And there's some heavy challenges that they're coming with. So we're going to start off the conference with that on October 14th. It's going to be from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Riverside Convention Center. And then the rest of the conference will be a host of workshops, speakers, poster paper presentations. We have a whole student strand on the 15th through the 17th. And so they can go to casponline.org. That's casponline.org.
Got it. That's great. And for anybody out there, if you are driving and you're unable to write that down, we will have all of that information on our website, the Answers, the numeral for the Family website. It will be on there as well in regards to either being able to get a hold of Troy or to be able to get a hold of information in regards to the conference. So now let's shift a little bit and let's talk a little bit about the role of the school psychologist. You know, my guess is that it's something that has changed considerably over the years. So, you know, just share a little bit in regards to their role, how it how they work with the kids, how they work with the family, and in this day and age of dealing with IEPs, how important it is for the school psychologist to be involved in that process as well.
Right. I'm glad you pointed that out because, yes, historically, school psychologists were generally seen more as only psychometrists and basically just do assessments for special ed. And there's been a dramatic shift in that, and that school psychologists are being promoted, and we're promoting ourselves in the school community and throughout as more of a preventative support, you know, for schools to that special ed is not always is the answer. Of course, there are certain cases where we do, but we found that in many districts and even including LAUSD, we've been found to be over-identifying students for special education, particularly African-American students and males in particular. And so we've really shifted our focus to try to be more preventative and trying to support classroom teachers and the school community to find other ways to address social, emotional, and behavioral issues, and as well as academic issues. And so we provide direct support and interventions for students. We consult with teachers, families, and other school-employed mental health professionals, like school counselors and school social workers, with the goal of improving and support strategies for the students and administrators, and also to just improve school-wide practices and policies. And really, again, going about creating a collaborative community and then also coordinating these services so that we're all working together in within each discipline to really support the school community. They also help, school psychologists also help successfully to improve academic achievement, promote positive behavior and mental health, supporting diverse learners, and creating a safe, positive school climate. We also are very involved in partnering with, like I said, those key stakeholders like our families, even some businesses in the community trying to bring them involved, and also any other community agencies, social services agencies, mental health agencies that also can be part of the process of just helping strengthen the school community.
Well, first let me start with just saying thank you, because to me it is something that is so incredibly helpful. It changes the whole outlook, I think, of so many students, you know, as well as their families. And one of the things that I brought up, you know, in the introduction, because I wanted to make sure that we touch on it, you know, and it's an ugly subject, but you know, the school to prison pipeline. You know, we were headed in such an ugly direction to where, you know, if things aren't working out, okay, start putting them in this direction, and that is not the answer. It's, you know, right. It's never the answer. And so with what you're doing now, you know, and you, I'm speaking to all of the school psychologists, you know, talk a little bit about what that pipeline was and what you're doing to steer us away from it.
That pipeline was that it started off at very, very early education levels, even in elementary school, where students were being suspended and expelled at such an alarming rate for behaviors that could be addressed in other fashions, like we're talking about here today. Ways of trying to find out what's going on in the student's life that they may be acting out in a certain way, or finding struggling with the relationships that they have with their peers and with authority figures, to really find out what's underneath that instead of just being punitive. And so what was happening was that you would see it start off at such an early age level, age and grade level, and then it just works its way up to where the students, by the time they're in middle school, they're really turned away from education because now they see it as a negative place and not a positive place for them. And then once they get, you know, by the time they get to high school, then they just like, you know, I'm done with this, and they're ready to what the school system would say or school personnel will be saying is drop out. But in reality, they were being pushed out. And for me, the reason reason why when I became president of California Association of School Psychologists and I was asked to develop a theme for our conference, this immediately came to my mind because I thought it was an epidemic, particularly when you look at African American and Latino males. The amount of numbers that were going into prisons and to juvenile hall and juvenile camps and things were just alarming to where it's basically, to me, it was an epidemic because you're looking at the whole outlook in terms of the impact on society and in their lives and in their communities and in their families, that if they're being, really pushed into this whole criminal justice system, what does that mean for their futures and for the futures of their families and the communities that they come from?
Yeah, and how much of this is also part of the problem of having some of the gangs literally recruiting right out of the high schools, to where if these kids do not have the kind of family life that they might choose, that you have gangs that are literally looking at this as their recruiting ground to go in and suggest that they're going to offer them something more of a family, mm-hmm. environment, when in reality we know that it doesn't end up being the case. But to a 15-year-old, right, that may sound like the environment that they want to move towards.
Right, exactly. And so if we could make the school community more welcoming to them and helping them to feel a part of that community, then that can do the same thing and replace what they were experiencing with the lure and the draw of the gangs. And, mm-hmm. and so now that's the way, if we can make the schools more of a welcoming, positive, safe environment for them, in a place where they can get the support to address, again, a lot of those family and community issues that they are coming to school with every day. Another major issue, which I'm sure you can talk about again later, is really on a national level. July, we have a public policy institute, and we work with legislators around issues that we know that are important. And this year, we focused in on trauma-informed and trauma-sensitive schools and really working to change the way schools are prepared to deal with what our students are coming with when they come to the school. They're witnessing violence constantly in their community, and so you wonder why when they come to school, they're distracted and not focused and not able to kind of respond appropriately to a lot of the issues that goes along with being in a school setting. So yeah, it's a lot, and it's a different focus and a different lens, and that's what restorative justice is doing. It's creating a different lens for us to look at these behaviors and behavioral difficulties that students are coming with. That is not just about what they're doing; it's what's been done to them as well.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, because the reality of it is that we as the adults need to take responsibility in the environments that we're setting up. So, and again, I think it makes perfect sense. I'm looking at the time. We're going to take a break right now, but I want everybody to stay with us. And again, if you want to follow along with us, if you can, you can open up another window. You can go to www.caspone.org. That's caspone.org. You can follow along with us and learn a lot more about the many changes that are being put out there. It's the decisions that are being made that are positive for our young people, and it's including them in the decisions that's helping us to get there. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Troy Javier Leonard, and we're talking about social and restorative justice. While we were on break, an email came in. This one reads, I am an assistant principal at a small high school in rural Illinois where you would expect absenteeism and graduation rates would not be a problem, but they are. Over the last decade, we are seeing our students' attitudes towards their education changing. They see colleges being out of their reach financially and the job market being minimum wage retail at best. We are struggling to implement new programs, and I will be diving into your site and your reports to see how you have managed to have success so quickly. Can you speak to this specific issue and the attitudes of young people today?
Yes, I mean, I think it is a problem that, like she said, is now in places where we don't even expect it. And I think that it's a larger society issue where educators and education teachers, school psychologists, and the like have not really been given the financial kind of compensation that is really worthy of what they do. When we think about that, we are the ones that are providing the future for ourselves, you know, us as adults. If we don't educate and support our students to succeed and give them, you know, a job that can make have them live good, successful lives, then what are we going to have out there in the future? So I think that it's about coming together as a community. So I would encourage her to try to look around her community and get some of the other stakeholders involved, what other community agencies might be around, some of the businesses, and create those partnering relationships so where they can perhaps, you know, tie it into a particular course where they have an opportunity to go to a plant or a business office or have some of those business people come into the schools and say, yes, this is, you're learning calculus, you're learning this, but this is going to help you to one day come and be an accountant or to be this in the community, and to kind of build the visual, you know, for students, young people. They need to see what that future would look like. So, you know, yes, I'm connecting this math and this reading to what I'm going to be doing in the future and who I could be in the future. You have to look at role models. So I think also bringing in mentorship is extremely important as well. And I think if you can connect the young people with adults out there that are successful, then they can see and learn that that could be them in the future as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And in fact, we had guests on our show some years ago that here in Los Angeles were taking inner city kids and taking them to the studios and finding out what jobs they would want, and was literally training them in the entertainment industry and realizing that not everybody is going to make it as somebody who's in front of the camera, but that there are thousands and thousands of jobs that are done behind the camera that is something that also takes talent. And that was something that many of the kids, and I spoke to some of the kids, and I saw a video that they put together afterwards, and many of the kids had absolutely no idea that this was even possible for them. When I talked to them about how they envisioned their life prior to going through and meeting with these people, their vision was, well, you know, we're really thinking that, you know, our life is going to be welfare. Our life is going to be unemployment. Our life is going to be handouts. You know, that was what they were seeing. The energy that they had now from the standpoint of saying, I love the idea that I have now been taught how to work behind the camera, and that I can see and I can use some of my vision to project a message and to do it and get paid very well to do it. So I completely agree with you from the standpoint of mentorship, that there are so many jobs out there, and there are people out there that want to hire them. They just need to be able to put them together, and I love the fact that you're doing that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, and speaking of jobs, as this is expanding, are there enough school psychologists out there to go around? Are we training enough people to be able to work in the schools to make this transition that we are now going through?
I think that's an excellent question, and unfortunately, I have to say that at this time, there aren't enough school psychologists. You know, a couple of things have happened when we all faced that economic downturn in 2008. A lot of school psychologists were laid off, and we're just beginning to kind of get back to some of the numbers that we had before. So that was one issue, and so therefore, a lot of students who were kind of in college and looking at potential careers in graduate school kind of moved away from that because education was being decimated. And, you know, we're starting to see some improvement with that. But unfortunately, at the same time, while that was happening in the past 10 years, California's public universities have scaled back or completely dropped their school psychology graduate programs. In many instances, for very logical reasons. So many school districts, like I said before, have had huge layoffs of school psychologists. And so new school psychology graduate school students were forced to leave the state to try to find work. So that's been another issue. So now, you know, LAUSD, we're recruiting out of state at this point. But recent changes in the way California funds it. Public schools, with Governor Brown doing the local control funding formula is beginning to help because it's emphasizing and not duplicating pupils with English language learners and foster youth has led to some increase in the number of school psychologist positions available in K-12. So with that money being earmarked directly for schools like LAUSD that have large populations of English language learners, excuse me, and foster youth, is providing some much-needed income to try to hire school psychologists. But again, through the cutbacks, the state universities haven't been able to keep up with the demand for school psychologists. So that's something that our organization is trying to work with the universities on right at this time. That's one of our goals. We're trying to keep them from either dropping their programs or trying to convince them to hire more faculty so that those programs can be successful and they could really be able to support those graduate students that are trying to and want to become school psychologists.
Well, now with that in mind, let's give a little bit of publicity. What are some of the programs that are out there for those people that are listening that are saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm in college. I'm taking psych classes. That is an area that I want to go in, but I hadn't necessarily thought school psych, you know, going for school psychologist. What are some of the schools that are out there that are currently doing it that they can go, okay, wait a minute, you know, maybe I do need to maybe switch to from this Cal State school to this Cal State school because they have this program?
Mm-hmm. There are a number of them. A lot of, like I said, some of the UC schools, Cal State Northridge, is a very good program. There's Sacramento State. I'm trying to remember a lot of them, but there are a number of them. You could probably go to our website and they could have more of a list of the schools that we're currently working with. There's a program at Humboldt State, but that program is struggling right now. We have LMU, Loyola Marymount University, Cal State LA. Those are a number of programs that they have right now.
Okay, well,
but
good.
If they want more information, again, they can go to our website. We have that information as well.
Okay, that's great, which again is CASP
online.org.
LAtalkRadio.org. And again, if you're driving, if you you can't write that down, don't worry about it. You can also go to the Answers for the Family website, and all of the information will be there. We have another question that has come in. This one is, I think, more of a comment. So again, this has come in via email. So again, I want to thank everybody out there that takes the time to do this. I know that our show is in some time zones, is in the middle of the day. So I appreciate the people that get our email press release, and then they look at it and go, okay, well, I have a question, even though I can't listen. They will then go on and listen on iTunes or Stitcher. And again, we appreciate it. This one reads, this topic is a critical one. I am the victim of two juvenile criminals, one fraud and one assault. Neither one was required to do anything to recover my losses. They did their time, which wasn't much, and I'm sure are back on the streets and may be doing the same thing to others who may be easy targets. The first stole two checks and drained my bank account. The second threw me on the ground, hurting my back and breaking my ankle while stealing my purse. Total, these two young criminals cost me over $20,000. And it's time our justice system makes people responsible for their crimes, even if they have to put them to work and use those profits to repay the victims. What is your thought on this subject, and are we making changes in this area?
Well, I'm really sad to hear what happened with this person, and I'm hoping they are getting some support right now, including possibly some support therapeutically that they may need, because definitely experiencing that type of trauma and victimization also creates some problems for that individual as well. But going back to the assailants and the juveniles, I wholeheartedly agree that there needs to be some reparation, and that's what the whole restorative justice principles are about. It's about trying to repair that harm. And I think a lot of times those we need to have programs where those juveniles have to sit face-to-face with actual victims, either their victims or just other victims, and hear their stories and hear how it has impacted them so that they can not just do the action and then not have to see the effects of their own behavior. And that's one of the things that the restorative justice principles are about, and understanding that they are not just impacting that person, but impacting a larger part of the community, because it impacted their family. Like she said, she lost $20,000. That affected her family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a huge effect. But I would also add in is that, you know, trying to get at those juveniles in terms of what are the underlying issues that led them down that path. And I think, again, us trying to address early on what goes on with these students and these juveniles, what they're experiencing that might be affecting these behavior, and some providing a lot more mental health support within the school system and in the community to get them at early when they start to engage in some of these behaviors, and try to find out what's going on with them and help them to find better ways to express whatever may be going on to them, whether it's depression, anger, any kind of trauma-related things. Again, I'm saying a lot of these juveniles, and it's not a way of explaining away their behavior or not having them take responsibility for it, but if, you know, these kids are coming away from communities that are very violent, you know, losing family members through gang violence, losing family members through all kinds of negative behaviors, conflict going on in the home, you know, domestic violence, a whole host of issues our youth are dealing with. And so we need to get at the root of what's going on with them and helping them to find more appropriate coping skills and ways to kind of improve their circumstances so that they don't have to engage in these type of behaviors.
Yeah, and would you... And I'm not sure if you're as familiar with some of the practices that go on in some of the non-public schools, but having toured many of them, this seems very similar to some of the, and some it's been called RAP, it's been called Forum, it has different names, but essentially it's very similar to the fact that the kids themselves are involved in the decision as to what discipline, you know, is doled out for a particular infraction. And I think for these kids to see this, both, you know, again, you're doing it in the public sector, but in the non-public schools, they're doing this, and there is a lot of data out there in regards to the value of it. You know, so so that may be something.
Yes, definitely.
As well.
Yes, it is definitely something that I've seen as well. Actually, the bulk of my when I was a practicing school psychologist, I'm currently an administrator for the last 2 years, but I did a large part of my career was in public schools, so I'm very familiar with what you're talking about in some of those schools. And actually, we're creating some programs. We've created some programs here at LAUSD that are really doing those types of same things, really providing those, like you said, those circles of engagement between the students so that they can really talk and see what the effects are of their behavior and get them to be more accountable and responsible for their behavior.
So that's great. Now, going back to when we talked about the fact that there's a little bit of a shortage of psychologists, you know, for anybody that's out there listening, why don't you share some of the rewards that you have found in being a school psychologist?
Oh, there are many. You know, like I said, we've been talking about the children and the youth in the school system. They really deep down in their heart want to be successful and want to learn and build upon the whatever interests they may have in their lives. And so when you can take these students who have challenges and even those who don't and help them to connect with other children, to be academically successful, to help them to be able to manage their emotions, you know, if they're having difficulty, you know, with hyperactivity and or being able to really stop and focus when they're having a conflict with someone, helping them to make better decisions and difficult decisions, helping them to develop coping skills when they're feeling depressed, anxious, worried, or isolated, all those kinds of issues, helping to see the face, see them more active. I mean, I remember in particular a student of mine who was that I worked in my first middle school like 20-something years ago, who was really isolated. My office at the time was by the library, and he would just kind of hover around by the library during the breaks, during lunchtime, because he was very fearful of his peers. He was teased a lot, probably bullied, and gradually he came into my office and started talking with me, and through that time I found out what was really going on, and that he was struggling with his sexual identity and coming to terms with that, and what that was doing to him in terms of not just his peers but with his family as well. And finally getting to the core of that and helping bring the family together to talk about it and to find out what they can do to support him and to find out what other supports would be available for him, and helping him to realize that, you know, he could still have a future despite what he probably saw as a negative based on what he was experiencing in his in and around his whole community. And just to see him go from that very isolated, sad, depressed state to where he was very, by the end of the school year, he was very outgoing and was more active, had friends, and was beginning to feel successful and saw himself as having a future where in when he was in the midst of all that, he really didn't even see himself as in the future, and he was actually suicidal at one point. And so to see that change, that is like nothing else, to see that, to have an impact on changing a young person's life like that, to where they really feel like they have a future and they feel good about themselves.
Yeah, now that is so beautiful, and there are so many stories out there of kids that talk about how that one teacher made a difference. Well, now we have that one teacher or that school psychologist made a difference in my life. to help get me to that point. And it could be that there are some kids out there that, you know, and again, I love teachers, that the teacher may be focusing on one area and this area may not be their strong suit. So by being able to that teacher to recognize that this particular child could do a little bit better working with someone with your training. You know, and again, it's everybody working together to see which one of us can help this person to achieve their greatest height. And there's no ego in that. It's just a matter of knowing that somebody else may be able to work with a particular child better than the next. So I just think that's a beautiful thing. And it really comes down to, as you brought up right in the beginning, all of us working together as a community to recognize the fact that there's a responsibility there for all of us to participate in the growth of the next generation.
Exactly.
So, and I've just looked up, and we just have a little bit of time. I would like to go back to the conference that's coming up. For those that might have only started listening towards the end of this, share a little bit more about the conference that's coming up, what's going to be done, and what people can do if they see this and want to get involved, which actually reminds me I was going to ask, who is invited to go to this? Is it just psychologists, or is it also teachers? Are there parents?
Yeah, it's open to all educators are primarily school psychologists, because it's a major means of them getting the latest professional development and updates around ethics and guidelines and just all the new advances and updates. So it's a way of us as professionals being up to date on what's really a research-based, evidence-based practices, those types of things. So it's really a really strong professional development for school psychologists. But as you said, all kinds of educators can benefit from a lot of the workshops that we provide, and also parents as well. And I'm so glad that you brought up parents. So I want to talk about that in a minute. But again, going back to the conference, it starts off on Wednesday, October 14th, and we're going to have a town hall meeting focused specifically on the school-to-prison pipeline. And we got a lot of stakeholders that are involved in that, including parents. And so we're going to really get and dive deep into that, and so that we can come up with some ways of addressing that on a large scale throughout the state. And so I thought that was a key thing to start off with when we were organizing the convention. And so for the rest of the days, the 15th, 16th, and 17th, there's mini skills workshop, maybe 90 minutes on a particular topic, you know, ADHD, behavioral challenges, all kinds of different issues. We have 3-hour workshops, and then we have some longer workshops, and then we also have students, our graduate students, who are a big part of it. They do poster presentations and papers on different things that they're learning in their graduate programs. We're also going to have a luncheon. We have a luncheon where we honor our outstanding school psychologists throughout the state, and we have keynote speakers that talk about the various topics. And this year we're going to actually even have we're creating a mentoring program between some of our more senior school psychologists and the younger ones coming in to kind of build on those relationships. And so it's just a wonderful event, and it's a great place for our colleagues throughout the state to just have a collegial environment and have a little socialization as well. And so the last thing, again, going back to the parent things, one of my goals during my presidency is to increase our engagement with the parents that the students that we are working with. So one of my goals as president is to kind of develop an ad hoc committee where we're getting the voices of our parents, of our students, into our organization. And so I'm going to be starting that off by having a meeting, and I'm working right now to get some parent groups throughout the state to connect with them, to have them participate and start planning with us on how we can build their voice into our organization in a solid way.
I love it. Now, will there also be non-public schools? Will they be present at this?
Oh, yeah. They have their staff are all welcome as well, yep.
Okay, that's great.
They can go to CASPOnline.org to get the registration information.
Well, Troy, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Again, I look forward to talking to you offline a little bit more about the conference itself. Again, for everybody out there, if you need more information, it's CASP, C-A-S-P, online.org, or go to Answers for the Family, and we will have it there for you. Troy, keep up the good work. Thank you so much for being out there, and thank you for working with our next generation.
Thank you for having me on the show. It was my pleasure.
All right. And for everybody else out there, please, if you find us on iTunes or Stitcher, leave a comment for others. Leave a comment. Tell others what value they might get out of the show. So that's one of the things that you can do that helps us be able to get great guests like this and continue to put out information that we hope will not only help our children, but help generations of children to come. For everybody out there, be good humans. Have a great week. We'll talk to you in a week. Take care. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.